Hello, and welcome back to another journey through a week of weird news from Odyssey stations across the nation, brought to you by the Something Offbeat podcast. This week, we're listening in to conversations about aliens from KMOX's The Dave Glover Show out of St. Louis, about a baby switch-up from KMBZ's The Dana and Park Show out of Kansas City, and about shock rocker Alice Cooper with Scoot from WWL in New Orleans. First up, we've got aliens. If you've listened to this show before, you know that's a favorite topic for us here at Something Offbeat. But this month just keeps on delivering when it comes to extraterrestrial news. And here's an example. The Dave Glover Show discussed the latest reports about a Tennessee representative and his claim that alien entities already reside here on Earth, in the deep sea.
Representative Burchett, you got him?
Yeah, Tim.
Have you seen the video of him talking about the aliens?
Which one?
The most recent.
No, I don't think I have.
He talks about that they've been here for millennia.
Yeah.
That they are in five or six areas of deep water in our oceans.
Oh, that makes sense.
That's kind of weird, isn't it, for a congressman to say that?
I don't know what to make of it because we're hearing more and more of those things at like hearings. I think the other day they were citing somebody who was a contractor explaining the four different alien species that we know of that we deal with. Like, this isn't a hearing. I'm like, that's stuff I used to hear on like,
yeah,
you know, like Art Bell's show.
Yeah. So why don't we care more about it?
I don't know.
Like,
it's
why
a mystery.
It's not the only thing anyone's ever talking about.
Me. I've been into this stuff since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I've seen those hearings, and I just kind of go, I wonder what's on Netflix.
I think the reason it's not a bigger deal is, A, like, politics is not... politics trumps everything. Sorry, that didn't mean the pun there, but it takes precedence over pretty much anything else in the news at this point. But also... This is where I'm coming from on it, and I think a lot of the reactions I've seen share this. Show me the aliens. Stop telling me stories and show me some evidence, because I think that's what we're missing. Because we've all heard these stories. How many times have you heard the stories about the insectoids or the reptilians or the Andromedans or whatever? They're all different kinds, right? The Nordics, the tall people that look like us, the Greys. We've all heard those stories. The people that are saying them in Congress, they need to show us. Show us the craft that you've recovered. Show us a picture or... See, that's the problem. If it's a picture, is that good enough?
No.
Because a picture could be easily AI.
Even a video's not good enough.
No, I mean, that's kind of the point. You almost need like a personal appearance.
Yeah.
Got to go on tour. Because, you know, I think that's where the American people are. I think people around the world, it's all the same thing. Like,
would Ronald Reagan be right when he said, what if there was an alien threat to the world? Wouldn't we all put aside our differences, meaning us in Russia and China? I'm just talking about the U.S. If they really did parade an alien out, would the week after we be fighting about Charlie Kirk again?
No.
No.
You don't think so?
Well, it didn't take aliens on 9/11 to get everybody to kind of settle down for at least a period of time. You know, it got back to normal after a while, but that also wasn't an existential threat to our, like, to like human life. That was just, you know, a big threat at that time that was dangerous to us. But did we ever think that that was going to be the downfall of the United States, that we were going to be invaded? No, we didn't think that. We knew it was a group of people that wanted to do us harm and wanted to kill Americans, but that's not the same thing as an alien race and a mothership showing up in orbit and being like, we're taking over.
What if they aren't threatening? Like, do we go back to arguing?
Oh, if they're not threatening, we immediately do that, because then you're going to have people, there's going to be all kinds of conspiracy theories about it. Well, are they faking? Are they really friendly? Are they trying to help us? Is it a long game? So you're going to have factions split off of that for sure.
What if they're sentient corn dogs and Andrew's our only hope?
I got to eat them.
Hey, well, then we're good.
If there's 15 or less of them, we can do it in a weekend.
Andrew, you got this.
I can handle this.
You got this.
We haven't covered any switched at birth story mishaps yet on the Something Offbeat show, but we've got one here from the Dana and Park show. In addition to covering the switch-up, they also address the shocking repercussions that a nurse who reported it is now facing.
It's been months since I have been allowed to talk about a switched at birth case, and I'm about to unleash another one on you, as well as a monologue from Bonnie Bedelia in the famous Lifetime movie event, Switched at Birth.
Mm-hmm.
A Philadelphia area nurse has been fired after she reported a baby switch mistake.
The nurse was fired?
Veteran nurse Joyce Fisher had never seen a new mother as panicked as the one who stood before her on the maternity unit at Virtua Voorhees Hospital, screaming that the infant bundled in her arms was not hers. She's screaming, "Where's my baby?" Fisher recalled, and I couldn't answer her. Fisher checked the ID bracelet on the infant cradled by the mother and found, in fact, it did not match the ID on the crib or the mother's ID. She brought the baby to the room that matched the information on its ID bracelet and discovered the infant in there belonged in the first room. By then, both babies had been breastfed by the wrong mother, potentially exposing all four to things you don't want to be exposed to, right?
Okay.
Fisher called her supervisor and quickly determined that both newborns had been in the nursery overnight and were swapped into the wrong rooms hours before she signed on for her morning shift. Fisher thought she had done the right thing by reporting it to her supervisor. 5 days later, she was fired.
For what?
Well, I think they were worried she was going to tell somebody else. You don't think the mothers were going to tell someone this happened?
Okay, is this a big deal, breastfeeding the wrong baby? I ask as a man. I'm asking as a man. Don't get mad.
Women can breastfeed who are breastfeeding another woman's baby, but then you have to do the whole panel. You know, things like HIV can pass through breast milk.
There are people who sell the product for other mothers.
This is what
who
a wet nurse was
it.
Back Tim, in the
you can say breast
in the day.
Milk. It's okay.
The issue is that the hospital thinks that the nurse disclosing this information is going to subject them to a massive lawsuit.
They're going to be massively lawsuited anyway.
And the hospital's right. But so is she.
Hospital administrators said Nurse Fisher could have prevented the babies from being breastfed by the wrong mother if she had checked their ID bracelets at the start of the shift.
Well, they're blaming her?
As somebody who has been in a hospital recently, it is, dare I say, almost annoying. And I understand why they do it.
I know.
And I'm glad
how
that
many
they
times
do it.
They check those bracelets.
They didn't come in my room and draw blood, give me a Tylenol without coming over, looking at my bracelet, and they said, state your name and your date of birth.
Scott, the babies were swapped in the wrong bins in the room out by the nurse's station.
But the bracelets
prior.
Didn't match.
How is that this nurse's fault?
It's not.
So listen to this. The incident highlights a perennial problem for safety efforts at healthcare systems. Hospitals rely on staff to report errors so they can address it and prevent the same mistake from happening again. But in this case, when staff speaks up, you can also end up in the crosshairs. So what do they want? Do they want you to report the mistake? Because by this time, you have two mothers who are frantic.
The lawsuit is, I don't know if it was you or Sam.
Oh, it's
said
coming.
It. The lawsuit was coming with or without her reporting this to her supervisor. The lawsuit was coming. There's no denying it.
She has filed a wrongful termination lawsuit against the hospital, and I agree.
I do too.
She saw the error, corrected it, switched the babies back, calmed the mothers down, and then went and told her supervisor. If something like that happened, and I want to hear from our people in healthcare, you have to go to your supervisor and say, oh, my God, this just happened. We're probably going to be sued. You know, I took immediately corrective action, swapped the babies back.
Here's the problem. She would have been fired if she hadn't gone to her supervisor.
Oh, 100%.
And here comes a lawsuit that we never saw coming.
Oh, you knew this and you didn't tell somebody?
Oh, you just tried to cover it up, sweep it under the rug? Uh-uh. Not up in here.
In all honesty, she may have saved them from a lawsuit.
Maybe.
If she was able to calm the mothers down.
Well, but we do live in a hyper...
that's true.
Litigated society. But what other option did she have? She, by the way, she if she's suing for wrongful termination as an amateur lawyer, she is going to win.
Oh, yes.
And she's going to win a lot.
Hospitals are under enormous pressure to swiftly and soundly rectify errors, especially in the Philadelphia area. This is where multimillion-dollar malpractice judgments have contributed to skyrocketing malpractice insurance rates and forced some hospitals to shutter services. At the same time, penalizing individuals who report problems can have a chilling effect, further jeopardizing safety. Hell yes, that has a chilling effect. If you worked at that hospital and now you see a mistake, are you honestly going to run to your supervisor? This woman got fired for it.
Aren't you supposed to? Aren't you required to?
That's what she would say. Yes, I was. I did what I thought I was supposed to do, and that's tell somebody.
Did she rat somebody out? Maybe. Who cares?
The attorney that's representing this woman says, quote, who's going to speak up now?
Right. If I know that you are siphoning off fentanyl and walking out the door with it every night, am I supposed to keep my mouth shut? I mean, I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
By the way, when she came in for her shift, she read the overnight report, which noted two babies had been taken to the nursery the night before at the parents' request and returned at 6 a.m. There were only two babies back there. There weren't 30 babies back there and they switched two. There were only two babies back there and they switched them.
And for our final story this week, we've got the godfather of shock rock, Alice Cooper. He's on tour this month and throughout spooky season in the U.S. To celebrate the tour, WWL's Scoot shared this interview with Cooper from his archives. They talk about touring, costumes, and the offbeat inspiration for Cooper's stage persona.
I'm a stone cold pro.
You know, the last time I saw you was at a record promotion party in 95 in the French Quarter. But the first time I met you was after doing an interview with you in 1976. You were the Grand Marshal of the crew of Endymion in New Orleans. And your manager looked at me and he said, you're just the right size to fit into the Cyclops costume. So I rode in the parade with you. I was the Cyclops right behind you in that entire 4.5 hour ordeal. And I remember being in the car picking you and Cheryl up at the airport, and you guys were recently married, and I just remember you were like two kids checking into the hotel.
Yeah, you know what? We're still married, 43 years now, and she's in the show. You'll be seeing her in the show. She plays the nurse, and she plays the ragdoll ballerina in the show, and she does all the high harmonies. And looks better now than she's in bed. So... So it's like the show still goes on as being, you know, something like Chuck Rock. I think it's just pure Alice Cooper. Every night is Halloween with us.
The controversy with Alice Cooper appears to date back to 1969 and the Toronto Rock and Roll Revival. You were opening up for John Lennon. Somebody put a chicken on stage. You thought chickens could fly, so you literally threw the chicken into the crowd. It didn't fly. The chicken fell down into the crowd, and they literally ripped up the live chicken. There was blood. Word spread that you bit the head off the chicken. That was the best thing that actually could have happened to you.
Well, because people were so willing to believe that I was this geek, you know, that rock and roll was very tame at the time. You know, everything was peace and love and wonderfulness and brotherly love. And look at the rainbows and the unicorns. And here comes the villain of rock. Here, you know, I looked at it and said, with all these heroes, where's the villain? Alice Cooper should be the villain. And so I became basically the Captain Hook, you know. And so people were so willing to believe that I tore this chicken apart that it made international press, you know. And I was immediately dubbed right then the most dangerous person in rock and roll. They were probably right.
And there was great controversy in the UK. There were attempts to ban your concerts and your music, and that only made your popularity even greater.
Oh, yeah. Anytime you tell a country they can't go see something, that's the golden ticket. I mean, immediately then, everybody bought tickets. We sold out Wembley so quick. The record went right to number one. You know, and then the thing about it is that's great. That's a great hype. Now, with that hype, you have to deliver. And what happened was we came in and did our show, and it was more than they expected. It was more diabolical and more theatrical than they ever expected. So we lived up to our hype.
Alice, what was it about you as a kid, or what did you see in yourself as a teenager that you can now look back on and see this is what led to the character of Alice Cooper?
Well, you know, first of all, I grew up during the British invasion. I mean, those were the years my most, musically, the Beatles, the Stones, the Yardbirds, the Who. I loved all that. We learned all that kind of music. And then I said, why can't we take this further? Why can't we now add visuals to this? I think it's because that my generation grew up on sort of on television, on, you know, you go to the movies on Saturday and there would be the Creature from the Black Lagoon. It Came from Outer Space and Forbidden Planet. And it would be, we would spend all day watching these movies. And I always kind of just thought horror and comedy are very close together. Mm-hmm. Because the movies were so absurd. And that's what I do in my show. Horror and comedy are very, very close. Goodness. And it's all held together by the rock and roll.
Thank you all so much for listening to this Weird News Roundup from Something Offbeat. Special thanks to The Dave Glover Show out of KMOX, The Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ, and Scoot out of WWL. You can subscribe to Something Offbeat on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.